It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Raisin Bran? You got to put Raisin Bran up there. Everybody knows it.
It's Mike Shope.
Listen, get your own stupid old dying person team and choose your own cereals.
And the Bulldog.
I shall unleash my fury upon you like the crashing of a thousand waves.
That cereal is soggy. You reach into the fridge for the milk and open the lid on the milk to pour it in there, and that crap is already soggy.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds.
That's a problem for a cereal.
A huge problem.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
You know, I haven't eaten Raisin Bran in, I think it's safe to say, decades.
Good.
But I do like one thing about it. There's like that little very, very thin coating of sugar on the raisins. Right? You can see it. I respect that.
Don't care.
So you are.
I hate raisins. I do not like. I will eat raisins in like a cinnamon raisin context is maybe the only way I can handle raisins. A cinnamon raisin bagel will work for me. If we've got like coffee cake, again, cinnamony, and there's okay, I can live with that. But like as a snack, as a compliment to a soggy-ass bowl of cereal? Get out of here. I got no time for it.
Cinnamon raisin context.
Yep.
Can that be a
cinnamon raisin context.
Can that be pluralized? Can that work, everybody?
So I hear you on the sugar. Like that could be a, you know, but I need the bagel. I can't.
I mean, I'm not buying it. I just, I don't have a problem.
Yep.
Didn't I have a raisinette thing once that I was blamed for?
Raisinettes. I did the Junior Mints.
Junior Mints. But at the movies, I would buy Raisinettes would be the choice.
God.
Over Goobers. Over Junior Mints.
Choose the worst.
Over popcorn. Over peanuts. What else is in there? The Twizzlers. Oh my God.
I would eat a 10-gallon drum of Junior Mints, which I hate, before I would buy a box of Raisinettes.
803. 10-gallon drum of Junior Mints. How long would that take?
I could at least like fight through it. I mean, raisins.
It's like you have to. It's a radio promotion. You're on a billboard with a cot. He's up there. What's he doing up there? He's eating a 10-gallon drum of Raisinettes to prove a point.
Junior Mints. Raisinettes. To prove how much better they are than Raisinettes.
Also, there was Snow Caps.
I remember the Snow Caps. I had a friend that loved to put the Snow Caps into the bucket of popcorn. Like, get the big bucket of hot buttered popcorn.
Oh, that's interesting.
Get the box of Snow Caps.
Dump them in.
And then dump the Snow Caps in.
And just shake it.
And just
mix it up.
Grab, yeah. She was a huge fan of that.
What? Does that work?
I don't know. I remember trying it and just being like, it tastes like Snow Caps and popcorn.
Popcorn.
Pretty much, you know.
Occasional Snow Cap.
It did not sell me. I've never perpetrated the act on my own. But I went to a couple of movies with this woman when we were in college.
Didn't catch on.
She liked this.
You didn't help.
As far as I know, she's still out there doing it. I don't know.
You didn't help make it popular. Apparently.
No, I didn't. I did not push the Snow Caps popcorn agenda that she
Snow
seemed
Pop.
To be.
Snow Pops.
Fond of.
I might want to get back to this someday. Dylan Larkin.
That's a name.
So, yeah, tell me. Like, should we get serious here? Is he somebody that the Sabres could make room for, that they would can't afford, and all of it? Am I trading one of my kids to? I have to, right?
Probably. You're not going to get your hands on a number one center type player. This guy, Robert Thomas. I haven't plumbed the depth chart far enough to know if. In fact, we just found out about Larkin today. He's asked for a trade from the Red Wings, being widely reported now. Elliot Friedman first had that a little bit earlier. Yeah, you're going to have to. You're gonna, you're gonna, you'd ha- I don't see a way around it. if you want to make that kind of trade, I think you're going to have to divest yourself of one of the guys. There's other trades you can make that maybe fall short of that threshold. But I think a number one center making $8 million or thereabouts, like this guy or Thomas, is going to cost you Oslund or Hellenius, I think, if you want to do it.
Do you have his contract up?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
It is through 2031, $8.7 million.
So I get 5 seasons. Why does he want to be traded? Because they don't win.
He's 29, by the way. He'll be 30 in July, so he'll be 30. He's tuck for all intents and purposes, age wise.
Okay.
He's just done. I just saw a note from Greg Wyshynski. I don't know if it was accompanied by a story, pointing out now it's 10 years since they've been in the playoffs. Now the Red Wings that got to 10 this year. I believe that's right. He has, because of that, played more games in 11 seasons in the NHL, in the Winter Olympics than he has in the playoffs.
Ooh.
He's played 6 Winter Olympic games
this year.
And only 5 playoff games.
All as a 19-year-old.
The eyes are playing. I guess he's saying, check, please. Like, he reached this is futile, and I want to go try and do this somewhere else. So, I don't know. In division, I don't know how realistic that is. Like that he's got to know, he's got control. If he wanted to come here, that would give you an opportunity to maybe even avoid having to pay one of the top tier kids. Because usually, if a guy is driving the bus on something like this, it limits the competition. You know, you can only trade him to certain places, and so that usually mitigates the return to some extent.
Do you have that too? SpotTrack would have that too. Not the list of teams.
Do I have what?
What? How many?
Oh.
Does he have a list of teams he would say yes to or would not say yes to?
I think he – let me see if it's
– they usually have that on there too.
That's not where I am. I just Googled his contract.
Okay.
Here we are. No trade clause years 23 through 27, so that's still in effect according to SpotTrack. It shifts to a 10-team no trade list 2028 through 2030.
Sounds to me like then he has total control over
it. So right now he has control.
He could say no to anything.
He can say no to anything. He can also drive where he wants to go. The immediate speculation right out of the box, guess what?
Toronto.
Well, no. Even better.
Vegas.
He's buddies with Eichel. They're the Rams. Vegas. They're in on everything. So maybe he'd love that idea. And if he does, then you're in the driver's seat as the team trying to negotiate the trade.
I want to talk more about this, and I want to make a point about, quote, the kids, whoever you want to put on that list. Hellenius, Oslund, Kulik, Benson, like that. Is there anybody else I need? We've got a few guys here that to varying degrees have been impressive or even outstanding, and I want to get back to like the idea of trading one of them for a big shot. Can I just say, though, about Vegas? I wanted to do this yesterday, and then the Coach of the Year thing happened, and I ended up just there the whole day.
Yeah.
I guess I just can't. I told you this. The reason I end up rooting against them in this series is because of the coaching change they made. And I'm not, like, proud of that. I'm not even sure I could really, if pressed, defend it that well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so ruthless, it just doesn't sit well, you know? And this isn't even about that it's Tortorella. I don't have a Tortorella problem. There are times when he's been a real jerk.
Sure.
So have I. Like, I don't really have, that's not the point.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, you go into a season with a guy, you get almost to the end, and they're in the playoffs. I mean, they were going to the playoffs. They didn't have a great season, but they were going to make it. And then you can them with 8 games to go. It just doesn't, it's also not even about, but it doesn't help that they won't let him talk to anybody, Cassidy.
Well, that's the part that really bothers me. I don't have as much of a problem with. I agree, it's ruthless, but this is the big leagues.
That's allowed.
Like you okay. Should be ruthless. If you're the GM, and I don't know how bad it got, but I've done some reading. Like that team was just dead. They didn't believe in it. They didn't believe in him. and there were some personality things that maybe crossed the line. I don't know like how much we'll ever find out about it, but that he had he'd entirely lost the team. And if you're the GM and Mark Stone comes to you and tells you that, or Jack Eichel or Shea Theodore or some respected veteran that won the cup 2 years ago for you, comes to you and says, like, dude, I don't really call the GM dude, but you get the point. Like, we got a problem. And I really think, like, we got a lot of good players here, and we could still really do something, but it's not going to happen with
and
this
you
guy.
Think that happened?
Yeah. I'm getting the impression that that's what happened.
Okay.
Yes, it was ruthless. Yes, it was 8 games left and all everything. But if you've blown it, if you've lost your team, and it took until, you know, April 4th or whatever date they made that move for you to realize it, I think shame on you if you don't make a move. I mean, you needed to do something and you did it and you're getting paid off. So I don't know. Like I think the part about them not allowing him to look for work is really obnoxious and offensive to me. Firing a guy, I don't know, like it's big boy sports. You're not getting it done. We got a chance to do something good here and I'm going to try to fix it. And so you threw a dart and it worked.
That's fine. I think I really don't want to beat on that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I know. I don't like it, but I certainly get it. It's not a move I would ever make or even
want your
campaign for. Yeah. Yes, like if we had, what if the Sabres had started to falter? Is it different because it's Lindy Ruff and he's, you know, Mount Rushmore? Like, is it different? If they had started to falter with 20 games left, should we have been sitting here, this has probably happened over the years, should we have been sitting here talking about they need to make a coaching change? That just seems a little bit crazy. But I'm not sure I'm right. I mean, what can you say about Vegas? It's working. Like they saved their season. That's what we're all going to say. Like, we don't know that it wouldn't have happened without this change. But I mean, they went from very much a middling team to they're in the lead in the finals,
sweeping Colorado.
That's right. Along the way,
where they landed. Yeah.
So I mean, that's just it's shocking when it happens. It happens in hockey. It really doesn't happen anywhere else.
Late in the year like that? No, that's right. It's not
NBA.
Very uncommon in the NHL. In fact, it happened twice in the NHL this year. The Islanders did it pretty late. Not as late as Vegas, but it was very late when they did it, and it didn't work. And then you got to go back, I think, when the move happened with the Islanders, the Robbie Fatorik with the Devils was referenced, and that was like the early 2000s, I think.
And they won the cup.
Robinson. Robinson stepped in, again, 8 or 9 games left. Sort of the same script that Vegas is, I guess, hoping to follow here.
I guess.
One game up in the final.
I was just thinking about that from a personal standpoint.
Yeah.
Would that have been – there would never have been something that I would have thought to advocate for.
I do think them not allowing Cassidy to interview sort of can get you to circle back like you are to whether – like just how ethical it was to do it in the first place. Whereas I think if they were letting him talk and Edmonton had already hired him, I don't know that you'd feel – I don't know that you'd feel as bad about it. But right now they fired him. They're on this great run, and they won't even let him look for work. Which, I mean, they got to pay him. So, I mean, there is that. I mean, he is under, you know, I guess, right? Like, he's still there.
He has a non-compete. So
right.
He's there. They have his rights.
Yeah. So they're not doing anything illegal, but it just feels wrong. And then that could get you to circle back all the way to the inception. Like, should you have done this or not?
Well, the comp, if you will, isn't so much Lindy Ruff. They didn't stumble down the stretch anyway, so there was no there.
Mm-hmm.
It's McDermott, because you and I felt that when he was fired, they knew it was going to happen. That
yeah.
Whenever they were going to lose, I think. I mean, maybe if they go to the Super Bowl and lose, it's different. But I think it was the plan.
Yeah, my belief is that Bean sort of laid the groundwork through the year. And I think you look back at certain things that were said and written, it just sort of looks like there's a trail of breadcrumbs there.
So
to some extent.
He's not calling plays on offense. He's sort of calling in and out, right, defensively, mm-hmm. but they had somebody else who was capable of doing it. The question can be asked, like, whether they should have done it a month earlier.
Right.
You know, like, that's what the Golden Knights did.
Yeah, right.
When they're coming up on the playoffs, the Bills lose that game to Philadelphia last year at Christmas and fall to 11-5. We know they're going to the playoffs. We also know at that point they can't win the AFC East. It's all set up. Well, I mean, should you and I have been talking about firing him then? Like, mm-hmm. it's just, yeah. it's a different sport still.
Yeah.
If they knew they were going to do it, could they have gotten something more? It's just a hockey thing. Could they have gotten something more out of the players by jolting them with that? You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I want the jolt might have blown up in their faces. Like, I don't know. Like, I
never know.
I felt like the emotion, this is all part of the same premise. Like, the emotion that Terry Pegula talked about, and that many people themselves also witnessed, Josh Allen displaying. I mean, we heard his post-game news conference. He could barely utter words. He was so upset. I felt at the time that was a clue that the people around within the team knew what could happen. So if they had done it a month earlier, I just think a lot of guys would have been like, you didn't even give us a chance. You didn't give him a chance to like get this right this year. And so I don't know if that would have, it's
that's something that could have been said about Vegas.
Yeah.
Though.
Well, again, not if you know, and again, I'm just going off things I've read, but if you know the team is dead in the water, then you feel a compulsion to act. I doubt that players on the team after they lost to the Eagles thought we're dead in the water. Like we don't have it. We're not going anywhere. I bet even more so maybe the opposite. Like we know that maybe this coach isn't going to last forever, and we want to get somewhere with him for him. But I don't have to be right about any of that. But I feel pretty comfortable about the Vegas part of that though. That they knew that, you know, this was not he lost it.
There are, just to wrap this up, there are, as we know well, fans who will always want the current coach fired, and whenever the season ends is when that heats up. Like for McDermott, it was like kind of pretty much every year, at least for the last five, after 13 seconds, like, you guys, we have to do this. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of that was pretty crazy to me. By the end of it, it was less crazy. Still, it doesn't come up until the season is over, though, as much of a lunatic fringe section of the fan base that it might be.
Yep.
Sometimes I don't ever hear it during the season, at least during these seasons where they're, you know, winning double digit games every year. And while there are a couple of screwy losses, we really don't usually talk about a move before the season is over. It'll come up that they should do it when the season is over.
Right.
Enough. They're never going to win.
Yeah, good teams don't fire their coach in season. It's teams that have won three games that fire their coach at Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever.
In football,
right. In hockey, yeah. I mean, we've got ample evidence again. The Islanders were, if not in a playoff spot, very close to one. They maybe had squandered a playoff spot when they made their move, hoping to try to claw their way back in.
They were fading.
Yeah. And same, you know, Vegas was just, maybe they felt they were just didn't have a pulse anymore. And I mean, everything changed.
Vegas wasn't good. The Islanders were fading and they were falling out of the race. Vegas was never falling out of the race, and they were still going to get to play Utah and Anaheim and these teams in the playoffs that, I mean, they did beat them, but they had a pretty nice little path. And I don't know. We can't know that they wouldn't have won, but you also, nobody will tell you that this didn't work.
Right, they've lost five games.
They're winning the finals
since Tortorella took over. Like four in the regular season, and I think only one so far in the playoffs. Anaheim went they went six games. Yeah.
Tortorella lost one regular season game in overtime. Okay. They were 7-0-1, I believe.
Oh, okay.
In the regular season
and,
under him.
All right, and then they've lost a couple of games.
I guess they could have gotten. They could have not made it. It wasn't.
That whole mix out there was kind of a jumble.
Seattle.
Yeah.
There was a chance. They were not clinched when they did it.
That's right.
All right. Here's Jim with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Hey. I've got a solution for signing Alex Tuck. I think idealistically, everybody wants Alex Tuck to stay in Buffalo if we can make it work with the money, and that includes Alex Tuck. So I figured out he'd probably be happy to sign for 11. And if he goes free agent, the most anybody can sign him for is 7 years. Mm-hmm. So if he got 11 for 7 years, that's 77. Now, the way I figure it is we could give him a different salary every year with it, you know, sliding down towards the end. And it would still come out to 76 over 8 years because we can offer him 8. So we first year give him 10, then 11, then 12, because then Skinner's going to come off the books and the salary cap's going to go up, and then go down to 10, 9, 8, 8, 8. And that would put him at 76. It would be just same amount that anybody else could pay him.
The eighth year is a huge factor. However you want to structure the contract, very much in vogue now in the league is money paid out July 1 or thereabouts every year in the form of a bonus. And like that's basically your salary for the year. So you can structure it any way you want year to year, like you're saying, Jim, but the way for bookkeeping purposes it happens, it's the annual average value on the cap every year is the same. So however you divvy up year 1 versus year 3 versus year 8 is irrelevant to what it looks like on the salary cap. On the salary cap, it's going to be the average annual value of whatever you agreed to him for 8 years.
Okay, but if the salary cap keeps going up like mm-hmm. it has been, yeah. like they're expecting it to, 8 in the final couple of years might be nothing. That might be like Tage Thompson's contract is now.
Oh, sure, but it won't be. It's never going to be 8. Like eight for eight is $64 million. Like you're not getting there. But no, I mean, the eighth year, if the point is the eighth year is an opportunity for you to get there on a lower AAV, I mean, absolutely. There's no to me signing Alex Tuck if it's not an 8-year deal here. That's assuming he wants the pot of money to be the pot of money, right? Whatever he's looking for, you know, if LA or Seattle or someone else wants to give him, like you're saying, 11 for 7, you can exceed that or match it with an eighth year.
But that money would have to be commensurate, or else what's the advantage to him? What's the year worth if I'm not making more money by signing for the extra year?
That's right.
I'm not taking 8 for 77 versus over 7 for 77, because okay. there will be an eighth year if I'm not injured or mm-hmm. retired, and that would be some extra $1 million that would... Mm-hmm. So it can't just be like you're just coming under it by adding a year to it. No, you have to do the opposite. You have to be 8 for 88 or something like that, right? I mean, that's... Otherwise, why would he find it appealing?
Because in the end, you're getting the same amount of money... It's just you're donating a year, basically. I don't want to do that if I'm the player. I not everyone wants to, but that's where like the hometown discount comes into play. Like, do you want to be here? Do you want your AAV to be X? Does that matter more, or does getting $80 million over the life of this contract matter more?
Okay. Well, I've got one of these coming up, and if they offer me the same amount of money, but one is for 3 years and one is for 4, I'm mm-hmm. taking the one for 3.
Yep.
Because it's less work. Is that out of line to use a personal example? Thank you, Jim. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog at 803-0550.
I head for Philip Zadina. On the wing for Larkin, gets a step on Chetker, right on the goal, he scores! What a beautiful goal, Dylan Larkin!
Dylan Larkin reportedly wants a trade, and we will see if he gets that request. What happens from here? Good morning, it's Jeremy and Joe, beautiful day out. Talk some more about Larkin and, you know, whether there's a... maybe fit here in Buffalo, but I'm sure a lot of different teams will be looking to make this a fit. Kevin Allen from DetroitHockeyNow.com joins us now on the Westher Hotline. Kevin, it's Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for coming on this morning.
My pleasure.
Long time covering the Red Wings. What? How surprising is this that it's not even really like whispers of Larkin wanting out, unless that was happening there. It's just like there it is. Like he wants a trade. How stunning should it be to hockey fans that this has happened?
Well, it is stunning still. I mean, I think everyone who covers the team has always sensed that, there's two different personalities in the leadership on the ice. Dylan Larkin's a different person than Steve Yzerman was when he was the captain. And, as a general manager, he is completely different in terms of style to Dylan Larkin. And I think there's been some points of tension. They had a negotiation for a new contract that didn't go perfectly smoothly, but it didn't seem like it was catastrophic. They got finally to the point where it looked like he should slot in, but there's also been some issues. Dylan Larkin said at the end of last season that he didn't think they had done enough to help the team try to get into the playoffs, and all Steve Yzerman had to say about it is Dylan and I had a talk, and he wouldn't go further, but it was pretty clear he was unhappy with that. And at the end of this season, Yzerman said he needed more out of his captain as well. And there is a lot of pressure on Larkin, who, was born and raised here, went to the University of Michigan, was in the National Development Program here in Plymouth. So, he's Michigan through and through, and I think he felt extra pressure certainly to you get this team in the postseason, and it hasn't been accomplished. So, now all of a sudden, this is a very unique situation. Rarely do you have a situation where, the captain is performing well on the ice. He's, got plenty of ice time. He's not complaining about how he's used. He just said, the situation would be better if I got out of here. And you don't see that very often.
How tough a spot does this put Yzerman in? I mean, him, you mentioned his roots. I can't imagine it makes it any better that he's from there and played at Michigan and has been there for so long. How tough a spot is Yzerman in, and what really should he be doing going forward here?
Well, it would seem he's in a tough spot because Larkin has a full no-trade clause, which means he can have final say on where he goes. But we've seen in Yzerman's history, going back to Jonathan Drouin, Marty St. LaPointe when he was in Tampa Bay, Yzerman's, I would describe his managerial strategy as stubborn. And he's not going to just make a deal to make a deal. For example, there are people saying, in the position Yzerman is, he's going to have to just accept draft picks and prospects. I think I would be stunned if that's going to happen. I think he'll wait it out. And even though we always say you don't want a guy on the team who doesn't want to be there because it causes acrimony, I think that's exactly what Yzerman will do. I think he'll wait this out until he gets at least something. You're never going to get full value for Larkin, but he has to get something that's going to help him now. If they're already looking for a number two center, so now you take the number one center out of their team, and they're in trouble. And, being in a bad position also includes is what's Patrick Kane thinking today? The Buffalo native who, the Red Wings expect him to come back. Well, is he going to look at this and say, maybe I better go elsewhere too? So, there's a lot of ramifications here. There's a lot of moving parts. And I don't think Yzerman's in a great position, but I don't think Larkin is in the perfect position either because he's got 5 years on a contract. Yzerman doesn't have to do anything. It's not ideal to have someone who didn't want to be there, but, Larkin isn't going to, at least in my opinion, is not going to not play. He's not going to not show up and report to training camp. I think he will play. And so we're going to have to see and see who blinks first.
You're right to bring up Drouin, by the way. Drouin wrote a letter to the Lightning that he would never play for them again. It was in the media, and I think he played 100 more games for them after that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, yeah, it was a year and a half.
Year and
to
half.
Be sure. And, that's what I'm saying. There's a stubbornness about Yzerman that serves him well. as a manager. And, you know, it's not, I would say it's a split decision, maybe not, you know, perfectly split, but it, you know, it's close about whether fans blame Yzerman for this mess or Larkin. Larkin has taken a beating, maybe unfairly, because, you know, he is, in my thought, a pretty good captain on ice. Everyone saw his contributions to the U.S. Olympic gold when, ironically, he sort of did what Yzerman did as an NHL player. Like, you know, Larkin is a scoring center, and for USA, he was asked to play a checking role. Much like later in Yzerman's career, he did that after being an offensive star. And he did that, of course, and, you know, he was lauded as being, you know, crucial to USA's gold medal. So it's a real fascinating, interesting situation. And, you know, I wouldn't be stunned if he gets settled by the draft, and I wouldn't be stunned if this drags out into next year.
Is part of an additional part of what would make it tough for Yzerman? Like, what does he want to do going forward? Like, I can't imagine he'd want to rebuild and blow it up, but wouldn't it feel like if you're trading Larkin, you almost have to do that? Like, it just feels like it would be tough to trade him and then also do enough that you would be better going forward.
Well, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You're absolutely right on that position. But, you know, that's who Yzerman is. Like, he knows the history here, and everyone says, including I just said it before, you're never going to get full value. But he's going to try. Like, he's really going to push it to try to get someone because, you know, and no one understands this better than Buffalo fans. The Red Wings have gone a decade now without making the playoffs. And, you know, they were expecting to have major changes this summer, you know, with the idea that, you know, they've been close for 3 years and then they've fallen off the cliff in March. And so, you know, Yzerman has decreed that he thinks his team isn't tough enough, so he's going to go out and get some players that are hard to play against. He knows they need a scorer, so he's going to attempt to do that as well. And they got to find a center to play with Alex DeBrincat. And now I'm going to say maybe Patrick Kane, because I think this changes everything if you're Patrick Kane. And if, you know, if that's the case, so he was already going to do that. And, you know, there's some interesting options out there. Like, you know, watching the Vegas Golden Knights and Carolina in the final. Well, Vegas has got some cap issues, not surprising. They always do. And they're going to have to move some big pieces. Maybe even a guy like Thomas Hertl. Jack Eichel and Larkin are very good friends from their USA hockey program days and, of course, with the Olympic team. Could they figure something out there where Vegas ends up sending Hertl and a couple other players, maybe Carlson and some other players, and then, you know, Larkin ends up, you know, in Vegas with Eichel as their 1-2 center, and suddenly Detroit, you know, replaces Larkin with Hertl, and, you know, maybe moves Carlson back to center. And his number two. I mean, there is some options out here that they, you know, will have. You know, they may call the Toronto Maple Leafs, and, you know, Matthews and Larkin are tight. Toronto looking with Matthews and Larkin as their centers. Would they give up Nylander? Not a center, but another pretty big piece for the Red Wings to have. So I think there's sort of, if they're creative enough, there might be something out there, but because of the salary cap situation. But it's certainly not a favorable situation for Yzerman to be in.
Kevin, do you think the Red Wings and Yzerman are more likely to look at Buffalo and Montreal the last 2 years, and even Ottawa to a point? Like, the young players have come together and it all started to kind of pop, and look at that as a sign to kind of stick with something, stick with a plan? Or do you feel like, I don't know, that there could be the potential to look at the division as a window here not really being open, and maybe a longer term play would be the better idea?
Well, I'm going to harken back to, it's probably been 2 years ago now, when Steve Yzerman said to the assembled media that, you know, when they were saying, you know, how hard it is to compete, you know, in the Atlantic Division with Boston and Tampa Bay and Florida. And he goes, you know, we're not competing with Tampa and Boston and Florida. We're competing with Boston and Montreal and Ottawa. You know, that's there where we were. or are, and we've got to try to stay ahead of them. Well, guess what? They've fallen behind them. So I think they feel that they will be able to compete, you know, if they don't lose this trade badly. You know, they like a lot of their pieces. Moritz Seider is a really good defenseman, you know, fifth in the Norris Trophy. You know, and he's not like the usual Norris Trophy winners where he's not all offense. You know, he's rugged and he's durable. He's never missed a game in his NHL career. So they got him. Lucas Raymond is a good hockey player as well. Alex DeBrincat, three-time 40-goal scorer. Edvinson, 6'6", a rugged defenseman, plays a heavy game. So there's a lot to like about the Red Wings. But if this trade goes south and they get forced into taking, you know, two first-round picks and a second-round pick and a B prospect, it'll be disastrous because they will indeed fall way behind the Ottawa, Buffalo, Montreal crowd.
Is this situation dangerous to Yzerman's job status at all? Like, what's his relationship like with ownership? Like, would it even matter? Like, is he as safe as it comes, or is he in danger here?
Yeah, it's interesting phrasing, safe as it comes. Well, this is our take on it, and it's hard because Steve Yzerman, I always say you got a better chance of getting the nuclear codes from the President of the United States than you do to get information from Yzerman. He's very, very difficult, very guarded, does not allow anything to sort of leak out about his team. Well, the Ilitch family is sort of like that as well. So we're not really absolutely 100% sure, but here's what we do know. We do know that Chris Illich's ownership has been more about baseball than it's been about hockey. That baseball, he's involved, he's engaged, he hangs out with the brass of the Detroit Tigers. He's less so with the Red Wings. He tends to trust Steve Yzerman because Steve Yzerman has been not only the team's general manager, but a family friend. Mike and Marion Illich treated him like a son, and Marion is still alive, and she still views him as a son. So is he safe? The word we got is yes, that they still believe in him. They like him. He's a legend. You know, there's Gordie Howe, and there's Yzerman, and there's Lidstrom. You know, that's the, you know, Mount Rushmore, and, you know, they have one of those running their team. So I think he's safe, but at some point, you know, this is the year six, and, you know, I don't believe in the five-year plan. I think it takes much longer than that. But still, you know, at some point, you know, you can't have, like, three consecutive March collapses and not eventually pay a price. Like, of all the teams that have had droughts of longer than 7 years, Yzerman is the only one. I think there's been 20-some of them through the NHL history who has survived after that. You know, he continues to go on. So I think he's safe, but, you know, I'm not absolutely positive of that.
Kevin Allen, Detroit Hockey Now on the Western Hotline. Kevin, thanks very much.
All right. Talk to you later.
Indeed. Bye. Thanks, Kevin.
Someone told me to look up the Detroit Red Wings lottery luck.
So I did that. I saw the same. Yeah, some reached out to both of us, Brandon.
Yeah.
And
did you find the spreadsheet?
Yeah, they really.
It's a fascinating spreadsheet, if I could just simply say that.
Oh,
it's,
spreadsheet. I've got something different.
I've got a full spreadsheet that I'm looking at this morning. These are the kind of spreadsheets we look at work, which is every NHL team and then how many spots they moved up or down in a draft lottery every year since 1995.
Okay, you have that because I have the list of like guys they missed out on by how far they fell.
It's not that bad. I mean, the Red Wings.
Yeah.
Basically, you have to go back to 2020 for them to have a significant drop. They dropped one spot last year. But from 2020 to 2016, they dropped 3, 2, 1, and 2. You can basically look at all-time draft lottery luck. Do you know who the number one team of all time is in draft lottery luck?
Edmonton.
No.
Really? With all the ones they won?
No. Edmonton. Edmonton has moved up two spots and one spot.
Oh, they're doing a number of spots. How many, like who got first
how many
overall?
Spots you moved up?
Okay, well then didn't the Rangers move up like 12 spots 1 year?
14.
Yeah, like that. So they got lucky in 1 year, but it was a huge.
Yeah. It's funny because what this illustrates, kind of like the NBA just changed their lottery format. 14 spots, right.
That's insane.
The Flyers moved up 11 spots once. The number one team is the Chicago Blackhawks. Okay. In NHL history, the Chicago Blackhawks have had the most draft lottery luck. Number two is the Rangers because of that 14. But there's a very clear line where things changed. And it's the 2015 draft that ends up being like kind of funny here.
Mm-hmm.
Because before then, the most you could move up was four spots. You mm-hmm. couldn't move up any more than four. Then they changed the lottery, mm-hmm. and you entered a world where the Flyers can move up 11, the Hurricanes can move up 9, that's Svechnikov. Mm-hmm. The Blackhawks can move up 9 spots, Rangers 14, the Islanders 10 for Matthew Schaefer,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Is that who that was for?
I think so, yep.
Anyway, like it's just, you introduce chaos and more teams dropping spots and teams with these huge, giant jumps.
See, when you factor in like who the players were, though, like Detroit didn't really get that unlucky.
They miss out.
So they had the worst record in the NHL going into the 2020 draft lottery. Yeah. They fell to fourth. That sucks. The guy who went first that year was Lafreniere, and then Byfield, and who Detroit ended up with four, Lucas Raymond, who's better than both of them.
That's right, yeah.
So
no bad luck
it wasn't
there.
Like they lost out on McDavid or Matthews. You know, like the other time they fell a little bit, they were the fourth worst record. They dropped to six. That year, it goes Jack Hughes, Kaapo Kakko, Kirby Dach, and Bo Byram. They end up at six and pick Mo Sider, who's better than all of those guys except for Hughes. So they maybe got lucky in when they fell. Sure, they lost some lotteries and moved down, and then they ended up with players that were better than the guys that went ahead of them.
Yeah.
So they didn't really miss out on – there's no missing out on a generational guy that I see from the Red Wings. Like, oh, how could they overcome that? I don't see that happening. In fact, it's almost impressive that Yzerman has not been able to build a winner, given that those couple of times they were at the top of the draft, Lucas Raymond, Mo Sider, both amazing players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you didn't have a miss, really, when you were picking up high, and you still have just nothing to show for it at all.
803-0550. Vegas falls. They blow a two-goal lead in the third period, and it was 2-0, and the final score ends up being 4-3. Like, three straight for Carolina, then Vegas scores late. And they go to overtime where Carolina wins on a power play. My complaint about last night's game, I did not watch a lot of the pregame. Mm-hmm. But can I just ask, this is old man yells at cloud. Why are we doing the thing where we say the game's at 8 o'clock and at 8:20 it has not started? Why are we doing this?
What, are you new here? Of course they do that. Although, yeah, this series has been really bad, hasn't it?
Very.
Usually they go 10 minutes.
Just say what time the game starts.
Right.
This is not a concept that is impossible for humans to actually employ. They do this in the Champions League, a game that is bigger than the Super Bowl. It starts when it starts.
If they say noon, it's noon.
It starts at noon.
Yeah.
And if you want to watch pregame, you go to pregame. This is the movies all over again. What time's the movie? 8 p.m. Great. What time should I get there? 8:30.
All right, that's when I should.
Why are we doing this? Is this an American problem? It's a Canadian problem, maybe too. 8:20? The game is not begun yet. It's not game one.
It normally is like 10 minutes. Last night, it's been 20 minutes.
This is just game two of a series.
Right.
What is this, the Major League Baseball All-Star game? We got to meet the entire lineups of both teams? And then do what? What ceremonies are there for them to do in game two?
You got to crank the horn.
Crank the horn at 7:53. Get out of the way. Let's start our sports, folks. Or just say 8:20. Why does it say 8 o'clock? It's wild that in this society we've made me the person that says, why don't they start the game when the game starts? Is the crazy person. Boy, you sound like you're really angry about that, dude. Why don't you relax? It just put the time in. It's just right numbers. Come on. It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. 8:20. The game has not even started. I feel like the NBA games got started relatively close to the tip time.
Pretty close.
Let's go, people. Series goes back to Vegas now, where they're going to crank a different siren, right? Somebody else cranks that siren now. Both these teams are cranking sirens.
Back to Vegas now for their siren. Their siren's a little different though, right? Because it's at the very top of the arena, and there's like a gate, isn't there? They've got some fancy It's Vegas, they right? Should, like, they're a show. Listen, they're a show.
They should have a moat around the ice or something.
A moat?
If you're doing the castle theme, any good castle's got a moat. They should have a moat.
Would you even be able to see it? Could be like, oh, you're like a big moat.
They
like
should have a moat around
the boards are going to block.
They should have a moat around the actual ice, around the boards. Growing up, didn't you think there would be more moats in the world? Not a lot of moats.
You
probably didn't.
Do you want something right now on the Jack Adams Award that might make you even more mad?
Oh, boy.
Michael Russo, respected.
Highly respected.
Respected journalist in the sport for The Athletic.
Insider all the way. He writes it. It's real.
Something has happened that he says the NHL should take the honor of voting away from the Broadcasters Association.
Something else has happened?
He says that if it's true, as Friedman reports, I did not see Friedman report this, 40 broadcasters did not return ballots for the Jack Adams. Absolutely egregious when only 99 voted out of a possible 139. So 40 didn't vote? They just forgot or left their ballots at home? 40 people had a vote and didn't return the ballot. What?
That doesn't make me madder.
That doesn't make you madder?
Nah.
I think that's incredible.
There's a point in here about sample size, and if there were 100 voters or 10,000 voters, it'd be the same split. But
it's clearly an association. I mean, yesterday the Randy Hahn thing that is not taking it seriously. They're not taking it seriously. 40 people didn't return votes. Okay,
I'd be more likely to want to revoke the vote of the guy that says I've been trying to get John Cooper this award.
Yeah, no, I think that's worse.
Take his vote away, and then take the people that didn't vote and give their votes to somebody else. 803-0550 is our phone number. We'll check in with Paul, get his thoughts on Dylan Larkin. The Dylan Larkin, I'm not sure if the Dylan Larkin rumor, or who knows if the Sabres will actually be in on him, or if he gets traded. As Kevin Allen said, he wouldn't be surprised if he gets traded before the draft, or if it drags on and he just is a Red Wing. You know, a guy requests a trade, that doesn't mean you have to get traded. Period. Like, that happens in sports. Guy asks for a trade and then stays. Who was a good example of that recently? The Niners had a couple of these. Debo was one of these guys, asked for a trade, signed a contract. Ayuk, those are not exactly great success stories. But then there's, of course, like the trades that we don't hear about. A guy asks for a trade, doesn't get traded, it all gets better. But anyway, on Larkin, this is going to be the one that I think sharp hockey fans know. You're going to have to give up something. Mm-hmm. And if someone suggests trading Konsta the Monsta, it's not because there's some fly-by-night idiot that thinks like, oh, we'll just trade for anybody. It's because they know the guy we're talking about is going to require a big fish. Mm-hmm. And if you want to make a trade for a guy like Dylan Larkin, that's going to have to hurt a little bit. You're not going to get him for just nothing.
No, it's going to cost a lot.
This is... I don't know. Is it how different is it than the Eichel trade? Eichel was injured at the time. Reinhardt trade, O'Reilly trade. Did those trades involve giving up a piece that hurt those teams? I'm not so sure it did. For St. Louis, it's cap dumps, a couple picks, and Tage, who was down the list on prospects.
He would kind of be like the Sabres trading Kulik.
That's right? Probably like, right.
A prospect of value, but it's not one of the top guys that it's going to be like, oh, man, I traded him.
It's not your top guy. And where does Larkin rank compared to Ryan O'Reilly at that time?
Oh, the same.
Right.
Better, maybe
comparable.
So comparable, yeah.
There's a spot where, I don't know, maybe it doesn't have to involve the highest, the best prospect you got. But sometimes it might have to. So I think anybody saying, hey, Hellenius might be the guy, I don't think they're being flippant about it. I think what they're doing is suggesting that, listen, if you want to go play poker at the big table, you got to bring a stack.
Right. O'Reilly was 3 years younger at the time. That might have been the biggest difference. But otherwise, no, like the value of the player, that's where like a lot of these trades don't always end up costing as much as you feel like it should. But I don't know. Like, I think Minnesota lurking around makes me feel like it's going to cost. Yeah. Because they're openly talking about being desperate for a number one center. And here he is. Here's one. Like, how are they not going to be desperate for it? And if they are, then the price should be high. So I don't know. Like, Detroit's not in a position of strength, though. Like, they are, they're in a spot, and everybody knows now he's done. He wants to be done. He wants to be traded. So that's where you're trying to flip it all around, right? Like, when you're coming from that place where you know, well, you got to trade this guy. Like, he's the question would be really to the Red Wings when you're negotiating with them. Like, you're going to go back into next season with them?
Right. And again, like,
because that was part of, I think, what made the Eichel thing drag out. I mean, the injury was there too, but there was, I'm sure, a belief in the league. Like, he's not playing for you ever again.
Well, if I could make a comparison to this week, like, Dylan Larkin is not Myles Garrett. No one would make that case. However, if you wanted to get into the Myles Garrett trade chatter, what did you have to give up? You had to give up Jared Verse. That's a big piece.
Yeah.
They did it. Why'd they do it? They're trying to win the whole thing. And if you want to get in on, you probably can't get McDavid or Matthews. You want to get the best player. You want to get the best player that moves this entire offseason. There's a chance that might be Dylan Larkin.
Yeah.
A real chance. You going to tell me you're going to get away with that without giving up something that you kind of value? David Pagnotta, fourth period, reports last night he did this, that Montreal and Toronto agreed to a trade involving Matthew Nyes at the deadline last year, and that didn't go through in time. So
didn't go through in time.
Didn't go through in time. Montreal almost had Matthew Nyes. So is he available, and is he available to a division opponent?
I thought there were rumors about the Sabres and Nyes
okay.
at some point.
Well, like, there's the point about if you think you can't get Larkin because he's in the division, some teams wouldn't worry about that.
April 23rd, Chris Johnson said, going back to the trade deadline and now into the offseason, conversations around Nyes continued until the last minute with marquee Canadiens and Sabres prospects in play.
All right.
That was on April 23rd.
803-0550. Fun offseason. That's why it's bad Carolina lost. I wanted a sweep. We can get some trades.
Darren Dreger said the same thing in April. Toronto was in trade discussions with the Sabres and the Canadiens.
Okay.
Terrell Eving would have asked for Hague from Montreal as one of their prospects, and Roddy Mertka from Buffalo. So maybe were they bidding for Nyes,
folks,
and neither got
him? I'm going to give you a piece of advice, folks. Don't get a Roddy Mertka jersey. This guy's traded every
day. Yeah, I know.
He's traded every day. Actually, maybe get a Mertka jersey. Whatever you want. All right, Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Ahead for Philip Zadina. On the wing for Larkin. Gets a step on Chetker. Right on goal. He scores! What a beautiful goal! Dylan Larkin.
Dylan Larkin taking all the spotlight away from the Stanley Cup final. I mean, how
Not
disrespectful.
All of it.
How disrespectful.
Hang on. To be fair, Elliot Friedman reported it. Dylan Larkin did not put it on social media.
No, it was Friedman, and then like everybody else was like, I'm hearing the same thing. Yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, so he kind of does it, but also, did he take all the attention away? No, not really.
No, because the game turned out to be really good.
The games have been good in the two that have been played so far.
Hey, oh, by the way, because you did mention Vegas needs to know some suffering. They had a goal taken away last night. The challenge, goaltender interference, slash... You know, the whistle blew. They got to experience what Sabres fans felt.
Hey, welcome.
And then lost in overtime.
Welcome to whistles blowing or intent to blow whistle.
Yeah, it's a good time. It's a good time for everybody.
So
so they've experienced some pain.
No, they didn't.
No.
They experienced losing game two.
It was a good game, though. Seth Jarvis in overtime.
Hang on. Losing game two. We don't even blink at that. The Sabres lost game two like it was nobody's business this year.
Well, especially because, I mean, as I mentioned all the time throughout the playoffs, Vegas did their job. They just did it in game one. They took one in Carolina, and now they're off to Vegas for games three and four.
Yep.
Series, though, has been very, very good for a matchup that I wanted really nothing to do with.
I still want to puke.
I didn't sit with the entire game yesterday. For about the second period, I was gone, and then I got back into it for the third and overtime. It's been really entertaining hockey. It's
but also
been very, very good.
When Logan Stankoven got traded from Dallas in the Mikko Rantanen deal that Carolina sends him, they got a good player out of that. I remember looking at that going, oh, Stankoven, that's a good return. And that entire second line is formed off of the back of getting rid of Mikko Rantanen and acknowledging this is not working. We're offering him more money. He doesn't want to stay here, and he's not playing well in Carolina. We need to get rid of him. It's not very common that you see a team flip a player like that in season. And it be not for the sake of, oh, it's just for trade deadline, knowing that he's not going to stay here long term. And kind of like how the Islanders had to do it laughably with Thomas Vanek.
Mm-hmm.
He's traded from Buffalo. He's not going to sign long term with the Islanders. And then they gave up like a first and Matt Molson. And then they only get a second rounder from Montreal.
Yeah.
But it's also like the Sabres trading Marco Scandella, and then Montreal flips him for a second rounder after Buffalo only got a fourth. But those are deadline things. Rantanen was different. That was, we're trading for this player to become a long-term guy for us. And it's closer to the deadline, but it's not a deadline day move where they get rid of him. They acknowledge it well in advance. Oh, this isn't working. We need to do something. And now Carolina has benefited. Their entire second line is built off of the heels of that trade. Acknowledging what they did not work. Something I think that general managers need to do more often.
That's probably true in most sports. Honestly, I'm not even joking about it. That's probably true in most sports. Is I think a lot of and that's why I'm not saying it as a joke. You sort of have to have that level of arrogance to be in these positions. I do believe that is in many ways.
Yeah, if you second guess something all the time, you're never going to stay stable as a franchise.
No, and people, you know, underneath you won't take you seriously. You know, they'll start to question your moves if you're doing it like in live time.
If you're questioning your moves all the time, it's not going to work.
Right. So I think you have to have a level of arrogance here. But I think there's also a way to balance it of, you know, zigging when you normally zag and just throwing a bit of a curveball here. Because, yeah, I think most general managers, most coaches go in with the plan. The best coaches, though, evolve with the game. And it's, I think, a lot of times why we do see all greats eventually peter out. Eventually their system is discovered, it's figured out, and they fall off, right? That's just the nature of the
game. Even if we stick with management.
Yeah.
Some of the best GMs in the game have shown, no, the game has passed you by.
Right. Did you start to dive into analytics and start to use that more as a model, or were you still more towards the analytics side of things, right? There's probably a healthy balance for all of it, but if you veer too far for both, it can cause a lot of issues.
Chayka's first tenure as a general manager, as a matter of fact, it's professed that it's all analytically, but then Chayka kind of doesn't really follow through on that. He acquires players that are analytically sound within his first year. Antti Raanta's one of those. But then in that same deal comes Derek Stepan. That move is not really seen as analytically sound. It's not something that the numbers were very crisp on. And then the rest of his tenure is kind of the same thing. Where you're like, wait, why are you acquiring this player? That seems like the opposite of what you were professing. Ken Holland is really where I was going with this
point. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Ken Holland, one of the main architects of those Detroit Red Wings of the 90s and 2000s. He also then lets the game pass him by and refuses to step into a different role so that Steve Yzerman can get into the job that he has sooner.
Right, yeah, because ultimately he leaves Detroit to go to Tampa. And then now goes back.
And creates the foundational piece where the Tampa Bay Lightning become the Tampa Bay Lightning. He comes back to Detroit, and it's not really working out for him there, but, you know. But Holland, if I say that name in Edmonton right now, I'm hearing curse words from several people.
I think even it depends on who you say to in Detroit. Yes, it's fun years. It's great years early in his tenure. By the end of it, he's more known for the guy that wanted to keep the empire going. He wanted to keep the streak going rather than actually pushing them forward.
And then in L.A., he's like, yeah, I did nothing wrong this year. You got in because your team lost 20 overtime games.
Got in, though.
Sure.
That's the way he'll use it. He's got it.
I guess. But, like, yeah, no, Ken Holland is one of those guys, too. Jim Rutherford, another one of those solid, steady general managers that the game passed you by. Now, whatever is going on in Vancouver, buddy. Oof.
Yeah, Vancouver's in an awful spot. With this, though, with Jarmo Kekalainen, like, we really haven't gotten to totally see what Jarmo's going to be. The early signs and a lot of what almost has happened and the reports there, really exciting, right? I mentioned the arms race between Buffalo and Montreal that might be brewing is really cool.
His acquisitions also kind of screamed Manalytics.
A little bit, yes. Now,
Colton Parayko.
With all that being said.
Logan Stanley. But Sam Carrick.
It should be said, though, they work against Boston.
They do.
They don't work against Montreal. I give them credit. You set up for everyone else. Montreal just happened to be built differently, and that's who you end up playing.
I also think that it is Montreal got the goaltending that you did not. Ultimately, at the end of the day.
Right, so you still almost win that series.
You still almost win that series.
All of your trade deadline acquisitions not playing.
When the best performing goaltender of the playoffs is your opponent in the second round. Goals saved above expected. He rose up rapidly in those two rounds.
Dobish was very good. Not great against Carolina.
Not great against Carolina. But again, his goals saved above expected is still hilariously high. Because the team just could not keep up with Carolina at all. For Dobish, it's just the dam breaks. Finally.
That's really what it was. It was finally.
Buffalo got it to happen a couple of times in that series, but unfortunately, it's just not enough. Carolina, being the better team, just bends Montreal to their will. And again, I still think Dobesh was the best goaltender in the postseason. If there was an award for that, I'd be voting for it. Speaking of awards, Zach, did you see this report from Friedman yesterday?
I may have, yeah.
Here we go on never letting the Broadcasters Association vote for the coaches ever again. This is from Michael Russo as well. If it's true, as Elliot Friedman reports, that 40 broadcasters didn't return ballots for the Jack Adams, the NHL needs to take that honor away from the Broadcasters Association, and that only 99 of them voted. I'm sorry, what? If there are 40 broadcasters that didn't do it, you're not eligible to vote for anything anymore.
Like, yeah, if you just didn't vote, forgot to.
I forgot to do my homework.
Oh, man.
I threw up. Like, oh, boy.
There was a lot with that anyway. Award. It's not even necessarily anymore like the fact that we're in Buffalo. Yikes. And it's Lindy. It's more, you know, Lindy has left off a ton of ballots. You know, Cooper himself, the guy that wins it, is not on some ballots.
Apparently, like, there's 40 more ballots that everyone's left off of.
And then there's 40 guys that just don't vote. It seems.
What are we doing?
It's the NHL. Like, it is in maybe perfect exemplary of the NHL. Just when you think they kind of can't botch this, oh, hold your horses. Yes, they can. They absolutely can. And it's the broadcasters, right? Like, it's not even the NHL, like the people making the decisions. That's maybe the most frustrating part. And look, we don't have to re-dive into this, but listening to people even try to make an argument for John Cooper is them not even making an argument. They bring up past seasons. You know, they're bringing, and I make jokes that he won the silver medal at the Olympics. It's an NHL award. It is, the Olympics is not an NHL event. But we had, you know, broadcaster in San Jose bringing up the Four Nations last year. Also not an NHL event. It's ultimately a team that didn't, I know there were bigger players, but still didn't even have the most man minutes lost compared to the Sabres.
Right.
And again, it's not even just Lindy. It's the fact that Dan Mews with Pittsburgh, yes, he has Crosby and Malkin. They're both almost 40. Really what turns him around is going to get guys like Igor Chinnikov. Not even a trade deadline acquisition. Relatively early. It's right when Jarmo gets hired. I know that because me and Brian Kozier were texting when we were all waiting for who just got Chinnikov. We were like, I think it might be Buffalo. He's a Jarmo guy. It's not, and I'm upset about it, but whatever. We move on. It's little moves like that from Kyle Dubas that gets them going and Dan Mews kind of pushing them forward. It is what it is. It's coach of the year, but like we talked about it with Sal, what bothers me is that there are contract stipulations in play with this. There are incentives in play with these awards, with these votings, and people aren't taking them seriously. And that it's not hard. You watch the league every day. You're part of you're the broadcasters. You have to comment on the game. And yet 40 people couldn't be bothered. It's just it's the only award you vote on. We weren't even asking you to vote on all of them, which is ridiculous. 803-0550, the number to call. We're talking trade targets, potentially for the Buffalo Sabres, with Dylan Larkin's name being added in yesterday. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a beautiful Friday afternoon. This is WGR.
Missed him, or he would have gone in unimpeded. 3.5 to go. Hurdle into the dot to Sissons. Back for Hurdle. He scores! Tomas Hurdle. Then it's 5-4 Vegas.
Fine, whatever. Sean McDonough, Mike Shope here. Bulldog is off today. Sal Capaccio, Matt Waldman ahead. Before the Jack Adams news, I was planning on talking about John Tortorella and the ruthlessness of that move by Vegas that, you know, what are you going to say? Like, it's not working? We don't know if Bruce Cassidy would have led Vegas to this point, but we will never know that. And when you fire a coach of a team with a middling record with 8 games left in the season, they win 7 of those 8 games and then pretty much prance to the finals and take the lead against a team that isn't losing to anybody. Well, but it's kind of it's an interesting one because I just don't think I could ever have done it or supported it. Imagine if Lindy Ruff had been fired with 8 games left. I mean, the presumptive Jack Adams winner. Just like that wasn't even on the table. Maybe it's different because they've won a lot and that's a different, I think, kind of organization in a certain way. Not in a good way, but they win. So who am I to talk? But we're not talking about that, at least yet. 803-0550 for your calls. CJ is next. Hi, CJ.
Hey, Mike. Good afternoon. I'm glad you're fired up. You're fired up about this, just like all Sabres fans are. Because, you know, just to make a quick parallel, you know, Dahlin was top 3 in the voting for Norris, right? And then you have a guy like John Buchagross who's in the media that he's not even in his top 5, and that's only one person. But there's no planet in the solar system where Dahlin was not a top 3 defenseman this year. And then you have Lindy, where he loses to Jack Adams. You know, unfortunately, I think he was a product of being punished for being the coach of the team that was irrelevant for the last 14 years, and he has nothing to do with that. But, you know, it's a popularity clown show, and there's no reason why Lindy shouldn't have won the Jack Adams with what he did with this team, having the lack of star power with basically just Dahlin and Tage, and that's pretty much it. But it's, you know, this is another, you know, thing we can throw on the burn pile that we hate about the NHL because it's a popularity clown show that they didn't want to have Lindy win it this year, unfortunately. So
I don't know if I would say all that. I think there are definitely reasonable, I don't know, I don't listen to John Buchagross, but I think there are reasonable arguments that Dahlin was not top 3. I don't think he was ever likely to win. Quinn Hughes did not make the finals of that award. So I wouldn't hold that against anybody as like, well, they are obviously biased. I just, the point you made about what worked against Ruff was the Sabres not being good for so long is exactly how people win this award in sports. The Sabres were not an expansion team. It was not a secret that they were going to play 82 NHL games this year. This is exactly how it happens. He is top 5 all time in wins. There's no explanation I can understand. Keep trying. I appreciate the effort. The Sabres being bad before is not how he didn't win. It's how you would win. If the Sabres had finished 3rd in the Atlantic Division, 106 points, Tampa Bay, 109 points, flip it. Montreal, the same, 106 points. ah, well, Lindy Ruff, let's think about this. It's a 14-year playoff drought. Maybe something, because do they have first-team All-Stars? No. Do they have a .930 save percentage goalie? No. In fact, this guy had to rotate goalies all year, which the easy button coaches never have to do. John Cooper in his career has never had to think about who his goalie was going to be in any important game. This team rotates between, I mean, ESPN can't say it, Luukkonen, and then, quote, Alex Lyon. What is coaching in hockey? What is it? Is somebody going to tell us that the Lightning played a trap system that was actually, they didn't even win it. I defy anybody. Maybe you can do it. I'm not saying it's not possible. I defy anybody to make an intelligent argument that isn't just that, well, he had never won it before and his team's been good a long time, which is the lamest. That's just not how it's supposed to work. Give him a ring or something. Give him money. You do not, that's not how sports works. It's not how it's supposed to work. If the Sabres had been a wild card team and the Lightning had won the division, there's an argument for Ruff. There's an argument for Cooper. I don't think what happened allows for an argument for Cooper, yet he won, and it's not just because one person decides. It's a whole team of people that supposedly cover the league. What does it take? Wow. Jay is next. Hi, Jay.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
Just, you know, being from the other side of the border here, I got to be honest with you. Like, the whole lead up to the Olympics just sealed it for Cooper. Like, Team Canada this year was about Cooper, and they started hot, and the narrative came out that he's never won it, and I think you just couldn't fight it. Didn't matter what Lindy did. I think Lindy definitely deserved it. But if you watched, you know, Sportsnet's TSN leading up to the Olympics, and then once you got to the Olympics, it was all about Cooper. And I think that whole thing about never winning it, it didn't matter what anybody else did. They had just decided at that point it was over. It was Cooper's. Didn't matter what Lindy did. I loved the Lindy odds, and I was thinking about I should do this too. And then I thought, there's no way. Like, it's a waste, even though it should make sense. Just don't bet it because they're just going to give it to him. And even, like, during the Olympics, it was all about Cooper. And I got to be honest with you, we sucked at the Olympics. McDavid never got going. McKinnon never got going. If it wasn't for Celebrini, it would have been worse.
Yeah.
So I really think the whole narrative from this side of the border up into the Olympics, it was over then, in my opinion.
Well, you might be right. Of course, none of that is defensible. If I had a vote, I don't have a vote. I used to have a vote for the Heisman Trophy. They took it away. And I asked them what happened. I didn't get my ballot. And they said, well, we figured out that you don't cover college football, if that's fair. Like, if I had a vote for Jack Adams and I decided in January that I was all set, I don't need to follow the rest of the NHL season, I should not only get my vote taken away, I should get my job taken away. How does that make any sense? Again, maybe Jay is right. I think some of his instincts are, you know, good here. But none of that is any defense for anybody who voted. I'm still waiting for anybody on Twitter, on the phone, anywhere to make the case. Okay, well, this is maybe what happened. That sucks. What actually is the case for the guy whose team was the much bigger favorite and finished second to this one winning? What is that argument? Never has to think about who his goalie is, ever. Got the Hart Trophy finalist up top. What? Norris Trophy winner? Hedman? I don't know if that's right, but he's obviously been elite. What is it? What is the actual argument for this vote? Anybody? Randy's next. Hi, Randy.
Hey, Mike, this might be slightly controversial, and I can't believe I'm saying it myself, but when I saw Cooper win the award, I mean, it couldn't help but remind me of Allen winning MVP a couple of years ago. It's like, a lot of people would argue that Lamar Jackson clearly outperformed Allen that season statistically, and obviously the Sabres outperformed Tampa Bay this year, but you have two guys that have been in the conversation for the both separate awards for a long time, and, you know, it's, I don't want to say sympathy, but it's like this is their best chance to get in. This is each league's best chance to give them the award. So I kind of think it falls in the same category as Allen winning it. So unfortunate, but it is what it is.
Yeah, you know, that is an interesting comparison. What we had with Josh Allen was the year before, so this is what, 23 and 24, right? Stafford won in 25. 2023, the Ravens go whatever, one seed, 14, 15 wins, whatever it was, and they beat the Bills in the course of it, if it matters, and Lamar Jackson runs away with the MVP award, and smart people, starting with Aaron Schatz, who was the one person to vote for Allen that year, one person did so, and said, well, this doesn't really hold water that well. Like, okay, well, that's fair. I mean, that's a very thoughtful, intelligent guy who cares a lot about the meaning of his vote. Then 24 happens, and Jackson had his best season ever, and Allen didn't have his best season ever, and Allen won. And there was a little bit of that in the air, was there not? Like, just sort of, well, you know, he was kind of due. So be it. It doesn't mean it doesn't suck, right? I mean, I know that that's a real thing. It doesn't mean that it doesn't suck. It should never be how anybody votes for anything. Am I being too pie in the sky, altruistic? I like this about myself, and most people in my world don't get it. Every once in a while, somebody sends you a ballot, an election for some person of the year, video of the year, cupcake of the year. Oh, you need to vote for this person. Why? Because they're in Buffalo. Like, well, I think that sucks because I've never eaten any of the other cupcakes. And even if they're in El Paso, I don't know that it's not better. I can't vote for that. We're doing okay. We don't need this award as a community, do we? We just don't need that. We're just going to... I want to vote for you if you deserve it. And where you're born, I don't care. I want to vote for you if you deserve it. That's my ethos when it comes to voting on things. So now we're that much closer, you and me. What is the argument for John Cooper? What is the argument? Team Canada? Team Canada blew it. Like, it's not even, what if you had decided, like the second caller ago? I thought he was, you know, making good points. What if you had decided going into the Olympics that John Cooper should win the Jack Adams? Did you watch the Olympics? Did you then watch another NHL game for 2 months? What did you just, was it all just signed, sealed, delivered? I don't have the bandwidth anymore to think about this. I don't pay attention to the standings. I don't really care about my job. I'm just done. I'm too busy. I've got kids. I've got a mortgage. I can't devote 5 more seconds to this. So I'm not going to watch 2.5 months more of professional hockey. I just can't do it. You're gone. Like, if you actually make that vote and pretend to have cared about the last 10 weeks of hockey, you're gone. I just don't see how you should get to keep your vote. I what is the argument? Win the division. Okay, didn't. Beat the Sabres head-to-head. Well, didn't. Have the lesser team. Didn't. Anything. What else is there to say? Sal Capaccio coming up at 4. Thanks for your calls. More coming up. Mike Schopier, Bulldog is off today. Back tomorrow. This is W.